Welcome to the Movies on the Brain podcast. I am one of your hosts, Brian C. Wood, and with me this afternoon is my co-host, as always,
Chad Mitz.
Welcome to another weird, wild, and wacky week in the world of genre movie news. So, Chad, a small festival event happened in the city of San Diego last weekend.
Small?
Very small. Intimate gathering. Just a few thousand nerds. Your thoughts, sir, on the overwhelming experience of Comic-Con San Diego 2019?
Well, compared to years past, and I've seen other places say the same thing I'm going to say, it felt rather sleepy up until a certain point on Saturday, which would be, you know, Saturday at like 7 o'clock. So from Thursday to Saturday, they had stuff going on. But the normal, like, hullabaloo from Comic-Con, it just didn't seem like it was there. It was just like, you know, it's happening, but it's just happening. And then Saturday happened because, you know, those people showed up and they did what they did. And everybody went nuts. So, in that regard, it felt like a normal Comic-Con. But other than that, it just felt like a Comic-Con and not the Comic-Con.
So, I would agree with that. But we all knew, like, we were climbing this mountain to get to Saturday. And, like, there were other ancillary panels and stuff going on, and there was some good comic book information that was going to come out, and some Marvel Games stuff that was going to come out. We knew there was some, you know, some of their movies. Paramount brought a couple of films. But we all knew that we were building toward 7:15 to 9 o'clock, 9:15 on Saturday night. I mean, that's where the focus of all the preview pieces was. That's where the focus of all the attendees were. The lines were obsessively long. 7,000 hats. You know, it was a really, I want to say it was just like we were waiting for the inevitable. And so there was other stuff, and we're going to talk about night by night what was going on and what our thoughts were. But clearly, the most movie-related news came out of the Marvel Studios panel on Saturday. And they did what they do every time they choose to drop a slate announcement, that is, you know, work the crowd, put on a show, and just completely misdirect us at every turn.
That's what they do.
Yes, they're like Mysterio, except they're not actually conning us. They're just giving us the actual goods. So let's start on Wednesday night, preview night, the big chance for everybody to get on the floor, take a look at everything, see the wares, decide how much of their savings account they're going to pour into these various collectibles and art. And for the last 3 years now, we've gotten an event off-site called Scare Diego. And that has pretty much been the play place for Warner Brothers Studios' horror division, whether it be the Conjuring spinoffs, The Nun, that kind of a thing, or whether it's been, you know, the It franchise. So, It Chapter 2 is in theaters in less than a month, or about a month away. A little over a month away. And so they chose to come and bring footage and the entire cast of the Adult Losers Club to San Diego to kind of pal around and make very big impressions and tell stories about how they decided they wanted to do this. What did you think of that trailer that they dropped?
So, this is where me being a coward comes in. I was like, nope. I saw the first trailer. I saw the first trailer in theaters. Mm-hmm. And I was like, hell no. Hey, I was walking out of the theater to go get some stuff for me and my daughter, because we went to see God Awful X-Men. And I was walking down the stairs.
A movie that is already out on DVD.
For what? Nobody's buying it. I was walking down the stairs, and I looked up, and I saw this trailer going down, and I'm like, oh, crap, this is freaking It. I can't leave this girl in here by herself. So I had to go back upstairs and sit there with her, and I'm like, you turn your head in, and I'm just going to have to sit here and suffer through this. And I was like, never again. I don't care. This looks quality, but I am not watching a damn thing for you for the rest of ever. So I knew that trailer came out, and I was like, nope, can't make me this time. So I got nothing on it. This is all you.
So the first trailer that you discussed is ripped straight from the book. It's a scene directly from the book of her being attacked by an old naked lady. It's very creepy in the books. It's even more creepy when it's put in frame the way that they do it in the trailer. It's a scene that is very much meant to evoke the feels of the book and to get people from the book on board. This is your overall standard marketing trailer. This is picks up after 27 years. All the kids from the first movie are adults now. Let's show you the pictures of the young kids equated with their older versions that are all, for the most part, prominent big name stars. Let's sell you on the idea of coming back for another movie. And their marketing branding is you have to see, you know, the end of it, which is exactly what the book is and exactly what this is. It's a conclusion of a two-part movie. So I like the branding campaign. I like the trailer overall. There's a ton of Easter eggs in there, a lot of great shots from the book. It looks like looks like they're going to do a fairly faithful adaptation of the book. The ritual of the curd, they're not going to do. Massive orgies are not a thing that you typically can put on screen unless you're HBO. So I'm expecting a lot of blood. I'm expecting a lot of great performances. And hopefully I'm getting Pennywise in his like original form. And that would just, I think, mind trip a general audience's mind. I'm excited about what I see. I'm excited about what I hear the cast. I mean, Chastain herself talking about going and seeing the film with Machete and sitting down with them and seeing the first film before it came out. And being asked before the first film came out, would you be willing to play the adult Beverly? And her saying, where do I sign? And so, like, her enthusiasm to work with this director again, her enthusiasm for the material is great. The few scenes that we got with McAvoy look like he's going to be turning in a, you know, compelling performance. All the adult losers look like they're having fun and have channeled a good bit of their younger counterparts' energy and enthusiasm into these roles. I just don't know if this will do the numbers that the first one did, because the first one has the virtue of being a surprise hit in the vein of Stranger Things, because you've got those Stranger Things type vibe. You had the King backing, and you also had damn good word of mouth. Everybody who went to see that movie was going and telling their friends on social media how awesome the film was and that they need to go see it, and that put more butts in seats, which is something that you don't really get normally with a horror movie, unless it's, you know, The Conjuring. The only other movie in recent memory I can think of who's done this is Split, where, you know, it came out in the middle, beginning of January. It was a dead period. People started to go see it. You get that tag on the end that ties it all the way back to Unbreakable. People start freaking out. They start going on social media. Great word of mouth about McAvoy's performance. The secret gets out of the bag about the Unbreakable angle, and you run out to massive numbers. I just don't know if part two is going to be able to do that. September is going to be standard fare awards stuff, so there's not like a giant like franchise tentpole counterpart that could take audience share away. But I just don't know if it's going to do chapter one numbers.
I mean, typically if people like the first one, it just depends. The weekend will be strong. And from that point, it'll be word of mouth. I expect the first weekend will probably be bigger than the first one's first weekend. And from that point, it's
the
just
legs. Yeah. So, I mean, I think they made a hit with doing that. I think the cast made really good impressions on the interview circuit after the panel. I think they really did a solid job of effectively marketing the material. And so I'm anxious to see what they do going forward with that, and what kind of information leaks out about what they're actually going to be doing. I mean, Chastain's already said they're going to be filming one of the largest scenes, bloodiest scenes in the history of cinema. So that ought to be fun to see on screen. So
yeah, no.
Nope.
Yeah.
Nope.
So let's move away from Scare Diego on Wednesday night, and let's move to the Terminator. Arnold Schwarzenegger and Linda Hamilton and everybody, except for James, in San Diego, talking about Terminator Dark Fate. Mm-hmm. Your thoughts, sir, on Terminator Dark Fate's panel and Mr. Cameron's comments that he wanted to make sure that he sent a video message, because if he'd have showed up on site, people would have asked him why he wasn't doing his Avatar movies.
those things
that are being shot right now with Disney money.
Whatever.
Coming Christmas 2021.
So my general thoughts are, I think it's cool that Edward Furlong, the John Connor in Terminator 2, is coming back in this one. They announced that at the panel. And I mean, everybody said the right things. It's with me and the Terminators to the point of this series seems to be a good first and second movie, and that's it. Just a first and second movie. It's not a franchise,
which is better than Jurassic Park, which has one good movie.
I mean, one good movie, but it's got like three movies that made a whole lot of money. So, like it or not, that one's more of a franchise than Terminator is. Coming out of this, I hope that it delivers on what it's promising, because I like Tim Miller. I pretty much like everybody involved. It's just these movies are, you know, whatever. They've been lackluster to disappointing to downright terrible. And I'm hoping this changes it, but I'm to the point of you got to show me now.
Okay, so here are reasons why I'm excited and encouraged. Number one, Cameron is involved. Cameron was helping crack the story. Cameron was the one in charge of choosing the director. Although, what does give me pause is there's a gentleman that is attached as a main writer and has a story by credit by the name of David Goyer. So that makes me a little bit apprehensive. But
I think Goyer gets a bad rap.
Everything I'm hearing, yes, he's not in Kurtzman territory. Who's doing great things now with Star Trek, by the way. But he's producing. He's not directing or writing. Couple things here. One, this feels like and is being marketed as the true Terminator 3.
Uh-huh.
We are picking up with events following T2. We are feeling the ramifications of the choices and decisions made at the end of Terminator 2 to basically destroy the company that would go on to create Skynet, therefore preventing Skynet from ever being created. We're going to start feeling the effects of that decision that by Sarah Connor. We're getting a version of Sarah Connor played by Linda Hamilton that is literally just about eliminating Terminators as she finds them. I mean, and there's at one point in the clips that are shown at Comic-Con, she literally turns to Schwarzenegger's T-800 and says, you know, when this is all over, you know I'm going to have to kill you. And he says, I understand. So, like, her whole mission for, it looks like, the remainder of time after the events of T2 was just dedicated to destroying Terminators whenever they showed up. Third, I'm excited by bringing the original guy back to play John Connor. However, sources have since revealed that is not going to be a normal reprising of a role. So, you know, Cameron likes his toys, right?
Mm-hmm.
Cameron's trying a new toy now. So they got a kid to come in and play to do mocap. And then they brought the older gentleman in to do mocap. And he is going to now recreate the version of the character from T2,
mm-hmm.
utilizing a brand new performance
mm-hmm.
from this older gentleman
mm-hmm.
as a mature actor now.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to merge the two to create a whole new performance for Terminator Dark Fate.
Whatever. That's my official stance.
He's going to try this, and it could turn into Uncanny Valley like Terminator stuff. Uncanny Valley like Tarkin and Rogue One type stuff, but we'll see. He gave an entirely new performance, but it is allegedly the John Connor from the Terminator 2 performance. So essentially what I'm assuming is at some point there is a flashback sequence that you didn't have, obviously dialogue or film, to, you know, intercut from 94 or 91. So you're basically having to create a new performance from scratch, but obviously he can't play a 13-year-old anymore. So you had to go get a 13-year-old, and now you're going to graft that performance on. How that even works digitally, I have no idea. But I guess we're going to find out because Cameron likes his toys. Look, man, I'm getting the T3 I wanted with the original director involved and with a really good director at the helm, with a good writing crew and what looks to be actors that are thoroughly engaged and passionate about the story they're trying to tell. That's all I can ask for at this point from a Terminator film.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. That's all I can ask for from a Terminator film at this point.
Well, you're right.
Because, I mean, T3 Rise of the Machines does cover the post in-game, or the post in-game, the post T2 world. But Linda Hamilton's not in the movie, and they kind of obscure her role. And then there's the coffin with all the guns, and Arnold's giving a better performance than he would in any of the other movies that he's dealing with. But again, it's just not a great film. And then, of course, you get into Salvation with Christian Bale just yelling at everybody in the rain. And then you get Matt Smith and his craziness with John Connor's actually a megalomaniac dictator who's sending robots back into the future to kill people, you know, thing in Genesis. God bless Alan Taylor, how that man still continues to get work after destroying Thor the Dark World and cleaning up that mess and getting handed that and then this. But, yeah, man, that's all I can ask for from a Terminator movie. That's what they're giving me. I will be front and center in night one. If it's good, awesome. I don't necessarily know where you take the Terminator brand from here. But, you know, hopefully they return to box office glory and return to telling a good story.
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, I'm rooting for it.
Yeah, definitely rooting for it. So that brings us to Thursday night, which would include the premiere of The Lion King for the world. That would go on to roar to $182 million in the United States. Your thoughts, sir, on the Disney Nature documentary that is The Lion King?
Did you see it?
I did. okay. I was the only one in my screening busting out laughing when Mufasa was falling off the side of the cliff, because I just found it hilarious that, like, I was just hearing James Earl Jones scream, and there was just this blank, emotionless face on this lion that's falling to its death.
I mean, that's the face a lion would make.
Yes, that's my whole point, Chad. That is the face that a natural lion would make.
So, overall, I thought it was fine. I liked the second half better than the first. I loved everything about Pumba and Timon. It may have helped that the meerkat can express more than everybody else. So maybe that helped with that part. But I liked Seth Rogen and Billy Eichner together. And I liked, if I have to pick a performance of old Simba to go with, I would pick Donald Glover's. I like it better than Ferris Bueller. But, I mean, it was... The disconnect a lot of people are having between...
From Ferris Bueller, Broderick? Does Broderick play him as the adult version?
Yeah. You didn't know that?
No. I mean, I was too busy looking at Hollywood Reporter pieces telling me what happened to JTT and why he vanished off the face of the earth after 1999.
Yeah, he was... Matthew Broderick is adult Simba in the original Lion King. So Ferris Bueller. There you go. I got to teach y'all something today. But yeah, the disconnect people have with the expressive cartoons and the natural looks of the animals in this one. It was weird at first, but about, a quarter of the way through, I'd caught on. I was fine with it from there. There were things that they did that I liked, like Donald Glover's Adult Swim performance. There are things they did that I did not like. I do not like this version of Be Prepared. I cannot stand this version of Be Prepared. I wanted the goddamn song. You didn't give me the song. That's fine. But it happened. And, you know, in general,
I was really, just... Are you really going to beat Jeremy Irons? I mean, like, Etta Ford does an admirable job, but Irons just, like... That's about the same time that he was playing Simon in the Die Hard with a Vengeance. And
yeah, they're within a year each
other. Right, and he's, like, dripping in villainy. And, like, as much as I enjoy his performance as Baron Mordo, and we will get to the Bill coming due later in the multiverse. But, I mean...
Well, originally they were saying that not all of the songs were going to be there. And then they kind of said what songs were going to be there, which let us know Be Prepared was one of those. And I think they went back and put this in kind of as like, okay, this is your little compromise. It's not a full song. It's not really a song, but it's kind of a song, which I did not like. But there are other things that people hated, like Timon and Pumbaa didn't do the hula big piece of meat dance. They instead, as some people said, broke the fourth wall and did the Be Our Guest opening. Mm-hmm. I liked it. Other people hated it. That's just how this movie's going to be. The fact that it did so well and that it beat, when actuals came in, it beat the estimates from Sunday, because I think the estimates had it at like 185 and it came in at 191. It gave people just enough nostalgia that they didn't care, and it's probably going to make $1 billion.
Yeah, three films that right now from Disney that couldn't reach $1 billion. Because Aladdin's on its way.
Aladdin should be there this week.
Aladdin's on its way. Toy Story is on its way, and Lion King's on its way, and oh yeah, Spider-Man: Far From Home ain't doing too shabby. So
yeah, all three of those are hitting $1 billion.
Yeah, so that's like, you know, the projections right now are that six of their eight could potentially hit $1 billion.
What's the eight? Like from of this year so far?
Of the year, the Disney Buena Vista Entertainment Productions. So you don't include Far From Home in that.
Okay. But I know Dumbo is one that's not.
Yeah, Dumbo didn't make it.
But I can't figure out what the other one is, unless they're counting X-Men.
No.
Okay. So what's the other one? Because it was Dumbo and Captain Marvel, Endgame, Aladdin, Toy Story, Lion King. That's the one
right now. And then you still have...
Oh, you're talking about for the whole year?
Yeah.
Frozen's going to make $1 billion. Star Wars is going to make $1 billion. What's the other one that's coming out that I'm not thinking of? I know Artemis Fowl was supposed to come out, but they pushed it. So I think they can, like...
Run the gambit?
Yeah. I think Dumbo would be the only one that doesn't do it.
And Dumbo made decent money for what it was.
Yeah.
In March. Not the biggest bomb of Burton's career. That will still remain for all time Dark Shadows. Look, I like the film. I like some of the changes that they made. It wasn't something I would rush out and go buy on DVD. It's not a soundtrack that I have to own. They compromised a lot. I think some of the additions, as you said, were a response to fan reaction. I don't think they were initially planned. I think that, for me anyway, it was hard to get on board with because I felt like I was watching one of their Disney Nature productions.
I mean, they're like the way it starts, there are points that it's like, this does look like a nature documentary. Actually, I know people think it was dumb, and it kind of is. The dung beetle thing, like I've watched a nature documentary, and it's just that, and that's exactly how it looks.
Yeah.
It's just a little beetle pushing this little ball of poo, and if I didn't know that this was a movie that they made all this stuff up, I'd be like, oh, this is that nature documentary again, because it looks just like that.
Mm-hmm. Which was the entire point. I think this will embolden Disney to you've got the Little Mermaid remake coming, you've got the reimagining of Mulan coming. I mean, they're 90s stuff, short of doing Hercules again,
Hercules is like the only one left from the 90s. They won't touch Hunchback. That's not a happy thing.
You could.
I doubt.
I mean, that is a very dark movie. Yeah, I mean, there's literally Notre Dame literally burns.
But the whole point of these movies is to go with the nostalgia. And I don't know, there's like a lot of nostalgia surrounding Hunchback.
Yeah, I mean, Demi Moore's character gets cosplayed sometimes at like conventions, but you don't see anybody.
You don't see anybody else from it.
No, you don't really remember Jason Alexander's, you know, gargoyle. You don't remember that performance. The only thing I remember about that movie, like purely, is the you know, the villain performance that is tremendously great. The animation of the burning of Notre Dame, because they, as we now have seen, they got it, you know, pretty accurate. And then and then just like the fact that the movie premiered, had its world premiere in the French Quarter. They premiered it in New Orleans.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, they premiered it in New Orleans. So those are all really cool things. The only reason I remember that is because they did a live red carpet special, and the guy from Dallas who went on to do Step by Step.
Patrick Duffy.
Yeah, he hosted the thing. Yeah, that's the only reason that I remember that. But, like, it was a... I mean, Hercules, you've done a rock version of that movie, which bombed.
So that might...
And I Can Go the Distance is still a song that people listen to by Michael Bolton.
The fact that we've had, like, three Hercules movies in a relative quick span might be what keeps them from doing that. But then after that, what else do they have that they can do?
The 2000 stuff was all Pixar. That was all handed off to Pixar.
And I don't think they touch the Pixar. I don't think they touch anything that's recent. I think you go... Tarzan is like the last one, and they're not going to do that because we just had like two of those that sucked.
But are you going to... Well, like if we're sitting here and we have cats, and we'll get to cats in a moment, but like if you're sitting out here and you've got cats and you've done this with both Jungle Book and Lion King, you've got two animated movies with predominantly animal cast in Oliver and Company and Alley Cats or Aristocats that you could go back and do the same way.
I mean,
not necessarily that those are big nostalgia plays, but those are animated movies in your vault, and if you're going to do Maleficent of all things, which is just villain's perception of the events of
Sleeping Beauty.
Right.
So they went classics and nostalgia, and they're running out of both. I don't think, like, if you do Aristocats, I think you do it like...
Pocahontas. We forgot Pocahontas, which you're not going to do for the Native American reasons.
Yeah.
Although that's a nostalgia play with Colors in the Wind and Miko and Flit and...
But like you said, I don't think they touched that one. The other ones, like Aristocats and stuff, they can maybe do them the way they're doing Lady and the Tramp, which is straight Disney Plus. I don't know which other ones, outside of Snow White, because Snow White's the original one.
And I think they're doing that one as well.
Yeah, I think they'll do that one. There's been enough time between the other two
Snow Whites. The Huntsman's.
The Huntsman Snow White, and right around the same time
the Julia Roberts movie
Mirror Mirror, they came out. There's enough time that people forgot about those.
People have forgotten that Julia Roberts like took a little siesta to go make like whatever little thing she wanted to keep herself busy, and now she's back to being an actual like working actress again, doing dramatic roles and reminding people of what a fierce force of nature as an actress she is. It's my one disappointment with Big Little Lies is that we didn't end up getting Julia Roberts on the show. We have every other powerful aging female in Hollywood. So,
just while I'm looking at this, of the worldwide grosses for 2019, of the top seven, there are all of two that are not Disney. I'm gonna guess the two
that are not Disney.
Yep.
Class.
No. You're not gonna get. I know you're not gonna get one.
I don't know.
Okay, so one of them is kind of a cheat because it's Spider-Man. It is. Is number four.
Mm-hmm.
But that's technically Sony. The other one is The Wandering Earth, which I think is a Chinese film, and it is number six on the list. Mm-hmm. But outside of those two. One, two, three.
You can five technically and seven. You can and technically put Spider-Man an asterisk next to Spider-Man.
Yeah. So and Lion King is going to pass Wandering Earth because Wandering Earth is at $6.99. Lion King is at $5.95 after less than a week. Aladdin's and at,
now you have to remember their international rollout was a week earlier.
Yeah. Well, yeah, which is why they piled all in. So yeah, it's Avengers with 2 billion 791.
Which Mr. Feige was able to make his declaration there at the beginning.
Ding dong, the witch is dead.
The blue people have been defeated.
Then it's Captain Marvel dropping all the way down with simply 1 billion point one. Aladdin's got 990, so like in the next week Aladdin's gonna hit a billion. Spider-Man's at 979. Another week we can have Spider-Man's going to be a billion. Toy Story's got 866. It's going to be a little longer for that one, but, I mean, it's pretty
it's
much...
It's got the legs because there ain't nothing else coming out until... Yeah,
there's no other kids movie coming out the rest of the summer.
Yeah, the only one that I can think of is the Addams Family movie, and that's October.
That's October. Angry Birds, but Angry Birds isn't until September, I think.
Yeah.
So it's going to play out until then. And, yeah, Lion King's at 591. And it's only been a week and a half. Lion King's the only thing that's really going to eat the Toy Story, and they're just going to eat off each other. Like, you go to the movies, I want to see one of those two. They'll just go whatever one's playing closest. So, yeah, that is the summer. By the end of the summer, Disney's going to have the top, the top five of the top six. And then the one that they won't have, they get all the merchandise for. So they win.
They win. So let's move on from the Lion King and Disney's monopolization of the film industry to something a little bit more upbeat and positive. So Chad, Broadway. It's a wonderful thing. It has produced many, many great plays. We've got freaking Spielberg out there making a West Side Story remake 50 years later. Streetcar Named Desire. Like, there's a whole list of, like, great plays that have been turned into feature films. All of Shakespeare's plays have been, you know, done multiple times over the generations. You know, theater, and particularly Broadway with its musicals, have brought many great hits to Hollywood. We learned this week on Thursday or Friday that we have another one coming. We have another one coming. Now, there was CinemaCon earlier this year, and there was not footage from a certain movie that was posted, just some behind-the-scenes images. Now, sir, we have a trailer for A Thing Called Cats. And boy, howdy, is the internet set aflame. Your eyeballs cannot unsee, Chad.
Okay, so... Before this trailer, my brief understanding of Cats is I knew that it was a Broadway show. I knew that it became a traveling show because I would see commercials for it as a kid. I don't remember much about those commercials. I don't remember liking or hating it. I was just like, it just became so much that Cats just became...
Longest-running musical on Broadway for a time.
Yeah, so it just kind of became part... It is absorbed into pop culture, even though most normal people have never seen it. Broadway people have seen it, and they normally have strong opinions. Most, like, real Broadway aficionados hate Cats. They think it's trash. Mm. But there are lots of people that love Cats. So I have no ill will against this movie. I was curious to see what it would look like. So I was kind of eagerly anticipating the trailer.
And it's a stacked cast.
It is. Like, you know all the names except for the lead. I think she's the lead. She's new. So, but you know everybody else. And then I put the trailer on, and I'm like, okay, this is weird, but it's Cats doing stuff, so that's fine. But then I'm looking at them, and I'm like, what's up with the face? And then they move to somebody else, and I'm like, oh, they look cool. And then it comes back to somebody else, and like, what's up with the face? They move on to somebody else, and they look fine. And they come back to other people, and it's like, what's wrong with the face? And then they end the trailer with the worst of the egregious CGI shots. Mind you, throughout the trailer, they're doing CGI stuff with everybody because they're in cat suits and their tails and stuff move, and that CGI looks fine. But the faces on some of these people, it was like, if you took this a still shot of the picture, you're erasing the edges and then kind of color them in, and I'm supposed to be okay with that, and it just looks, it looks dumb. Their makeup looks fine. I understand enhancing makeup with CGI, but this is not what that was. It's like, it's, they took away part of the outside of their faces, and you can tell, and it looks really, really bad. Now, the movie doesn't come out till December. Plenty of time to fix it. But this is your first image of it, and the literally the last shot is Jennifer Hudson singing, and I'm like, what's wrong with her face, man? So that's not good, and that's what the internet's been running with. And then you add that to the people that don't like Cats, and they're having fun with this. I say all that saying, knowing good and well I'm going to see this movie, because my daughter saw the trailer and she leaned over to me at the end, still transfixed on the screen, and said, I'm invested in this. I want to see it. I didn't know the girl knew how to use the word invest in that way. It was 100% accurate, and I was thrown off. And then I'm like, well, I'm seeing this movie. I hope it gets better.
So it's a thing that there are a number of people who go to see Cats. And when they walk out of Cats, they are literally like I was walking out of Megan Sumner the first time, where I'm like, what the hell did I just see? So it is a normal reaction for people about a story that, as far as I can tell, is about cats singing songs while trying to choose which one of them is going to die.
Yeah, I think that's accurate.
You're doing the whole disproportion thing, the Honey, I Shrunk the Kids thing, where, like, you're making things smaller to think things bigger. That's all cool. You can call Peter Jackson. He's got a few tricks up his sleeve from the Lord of the Rings trilogy about forced perspective shots and all of that. There's a lot of creepy imagery here. I'm sorry, there just is. And the song lyrics don't help. And the way the mouse moved don't help. And the fact that in the middle of Comic-Con, this was the number one trend on Twitter for 8 solid hours...
Because it
tells you how much of a dumpster fire this trailer was.
This is trippy ass trailer. That's yeah.
This is weird, man. Like this is like, what did I just see? Weird. And I get why they've held off all the way until 6 months from release to put out footage. I get why you didn't do much, you know, with the at the CinemaCon, and why you haven't put out a bunch of press stuff until now. I mean, you've got some names of names. You've got Ian McKellen. You've got, you know, Taylor Swift. I mean, you've got, you know, Jennifer Hudson. You've got a very stacked cast. You got Dame Judi Dench. I mean, it is a who's who of filmmaking. And, you know, you've got an Academy Award winning Best Director at the helm. And somehow this man screwed up Les Mis for like an entire generation of people.
Is it that bad?
According to most, yes. I like it. I'm not like opposed to it. I think it's a decent adaptation. Mainly say by Anne Hathaway and Hugh Jackman, because we both know Russell Crowe can't sing. And so he does that, and now he's taking on this musical, and it's just like, just because a guy has an Oscar next to his name shouldn't just be like, okay, here's the check.
I think you can only work with the material you got, and I think this material is going to...
You should choose better material!
I mean...
There are other musicals, other movies that you can do. If you want to go back to doing another Broadway musical, there are other... He could have done Wicked if he wanted to do Wicked.
Somebody should do Wicked, by the way. But, you know, there's a... Directors have egos, and it's like, this Broadway show is the most... I mean, no matter how people feel about it, it's the most successful Broadway show. It's the longest-running Broadway show. People have strong feelings about it. I'm going to go ahead and make this movie, and I'm going to get the people on my side.
Oh, you're going to get the attention for it, that's for sure. Whether or not it's the kind of attention you want, we'll see. But
I mean, again, I was like transfixed on their movements and all that stuff. I don't care about the songs so much. To me, the beginning and end of how this movie's gonna really work out is fixing the CG when it involves their faces. Everything else looks fine. Like, they're able to incorporate it. I mean, it's weird because it is humanoid cats. Like, in a cartoon is one thing, in real life, there's no way that this is not going to look weird. But you gotta like fix that, because it takes me out the trailer every time I see it. Like, the minute I start to get transfixed on the weirdness of all this stuff that's going on, you show me a face and I'm like, that ain't right. And it takes me completely out. So they've got to fix that. And I think if they fix that, then let the chips fall where they may.
Well, you know, Tim Burton wouldn't have had these issues trying to make this film. So.
Yeah, unless Tim Burton, the guy that just made Dumbo and didn't make any money.
To be fair, he made some money, but just not. He made like $600 million worldwide.
He is, in sporting terms, this is what we would call the decline, because there's clearly a good side and a bad side in this thing.
So he falls into Tarantino's category of filmmakers who.
Tarantino's still like,
I want to do Kill Bill 3.
Look. His last movie was Hateful Eight. That's still good. What's the last Tim Burton good movie?
Well, I mean, Tarantino has that whole thing about retiring after 10 films, and that no director ever puts anything good out after 10 films.
Which is not true, but...
Yeah. So, is Burton in that 10 after 10 decline? Has he been in that after 10 decline for 20 years?
Maybe. He ain't had a good one. I don't know the last one. I'm not a big Tim Burton fan. But them last few, because I saw Miss Peregrine, that wasn't good.
I saw Dark Shadows. I paid money to see Dark Shadows.
I forget that was him. Nothing about that looked like it was going to be good. So I don't know when his last good movie was. What is it?
Frankenween?
It's like, is it Big Fish or Big Eyes or something like that?
Big Eyes, yeah.
I know people, I've never seen it, but I know people think that's good. That might be the last one. And that's got to be at least 10 years old.
So let's move to the big fish, the big kahuna, the wonderful, amazing, talented performers of Marvel Studios. So let's set the scene. Like, we're refreshing Twitter, we're on the move. We've started to hear earlier in the day that like Sebastian Stein and Anthony Mackie are at the Marvel table signing autographs, and speculation starts to run a little bit wild. So set the scene for us, Chad.
So as I'm on vacation, I'm just feverishly refreshing my phone. The first thing that comes across my screen is that Kevin Feige comes out, and the first thing he says is, "Ding dong, the witch is dead. The wicked witch, the mean old witch, ding dong. That I can't say that part is dead." And we can. He does have the caveat that Endgame has, as of right now, Endgame has surpassed Avatar. He does have the caveat that it's adjusted for inflation. It's probably still Avatar. I hate the adjusted for inflation stat. I hate it because, yes, you can say that, but there is no way to determine
what the actual rate of inflation would
be. Yes, because just as a quick lesson, adjusted for inflation, the biggest movie of all time is Gone with the Wind. However, Gone with the Wind came out when there was no goddamn TV. People went to the movies. They repeatedly saw it. How many re-releases did that thing have? This is why Gone with the Wind adjusted for inflation works. You can't do that with movies now. It's a whole different landscape. So it is what it is in real flat time. Avengers is the king. People might say they tried to goose it with the re-release that wasn't a re-release because it hadn't left theaters yet, but
if they had not even done that with their crappy little Hulk running into a burning building and Carl Weathers or Carl from Family Matters being the cop again like he was in Die Hard,
that's what that was, I still haven't seen it.
Yeah, they brought he was the cop and he was calling in a fire, and Hulk shows up and rescues the people from the burning building. And then he promptly tells everybody they need to get out of the way because the fire is burning at 700 degrees Kelvin or whatever. And it's our first introduction to Smart Hulk, and then he gets the phone call from Cap. Even if they would not have done that, they would have beaten them.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that was, what, $1 $10 million weekend?
Where they were
averaging like 2 or 3, so maybe it helped a little.
I'm going to find out exactly how much. But, yeah, it wasn't a huge bump. So, instead of it happening maybe this week, which was serendipitous that it happened for Comic-Con, it would have just been like next week.
Yeah.
What week was that?
It
bumped up like 5 million.
Yeah. The other thing that happened at the beginning of that panel is something that I don't think anybody's going to really talk about. One, the release of the logo for the Infinity Saga, which, and I like Feige's line there, we can sit here and we can talk for 90 minutes about what we've done, or we can sit here and talk for 90 minutes about what we're going to do. It was a nice little clip package. The fact they've got a logo for an Infinity Saga would seem to me to indicate I'm going to get a damn DVD set.
Yeah, you will.
That's going to include all of these. I think what is hampering that announcement right now is that they're trying to work out a deal with Sony, because they would have to include both Homecoming and Far From Home in that set, and Sony would have to work around the home DVD release residuals and that kind of a thing. So I think that's what's holding it up. But I
mean, that might be what's holding it up, but also the fact of, they know there's people like me that you've gotten all these other box sets. I never cross my mind because I buy them as they come out. However, this one, because there are like 3 movies that I don't have, this one kind of tempts me as the completist in me, but I can fight that urge. Also, because of me, I can't wait until December to have Endgame. I want it as soon as I can. So, if they wait, they will get the people like me that are going to buy Endgame and then say, hey, here's it all. You know you don't have everything. Here's it all. And they will get me to spend my money again later on.
I have no doubt that they're going to charge me like $350 for a Tony Stark Infinity Gauntlet that's going to have all 3 phases in it.
If they're gonna jack the price up on this, the case better be immaculate. It better be fantastic. So that's what I'll say about that. I do think that you're saying is true. Yeah, but
you don't create a logo for the Infinity Saga if you're never going to do anything with it again.
Yeah, they're going to do it. And honestly, and it makes more sense to wait until like the end of October, beginning of November. You're like, hey, Christmas idea.
Yeah. So those were 2 things. The other thing was, he brought out all his producers, the Nate Moores of the world. And he was like, these are the people behind the cinematic universe. These are the people who are functionally on set every day, working with these projects from development to conception to realization to release. Like, these are the boots on the ground folks who are working with our writers, working with our directors on a daily, minute-to-minute basis. Here's the glue of the MCU. And getting them in front of 7,000 people and getting them a round of applause, I thought was a very nice thing to do.
That is a very nice thing. Also, if I'm another studio, I'm smart. I have a picture, all these people to be like, how about you come over here and run my stuff? Because clearly I can't do it myself, you know, Warner Brothers.
So that was all the good stuff. And then we get into, as he said, not here to talk about what we've done, talking about what we're going to do. And we get the announcement for the Eternals first. And we get the list of the map, which has 10 dates on it.
Yeah, when I saw the map, I'm like, there's 10, but it's only for like 2 years. How, there's no way they're having this many movies.
The first thing I saw was the fall of spring of, and at that point I put 2 and 2 together and I'm like, they're gonna fold the Disney Plus stuff in.
Yeah, which they said, but in, you know, saying it and it never conceptualized that they would actually fall into phases like that, but it all makes sense.
Well, Feige was very upfront about the fact that they talked extensively about what to announce. And ultimately what they announced is interesting because you still got 3 dates for 2022 that don't have anything attached to them. You just went. He already says that's phase five, and we've got phase five. Like, you just announced a 2-year, 5-movie, 5-TV show plan. Like, that's a relatively short amount of time, considering that at Comic-Con 2012, you released a 4-year plan through 2015. Mm-hmm. And then in 2014, you announced a 5-year plan going from 2016 to 2019. So you're only giving us a short 2-year run with 5 movies and 5 TV shows where no Avengers and no team-up movie and no big arc that we can necessarily delineate right now, and 5 TV shows that put pieces and parts and shading around the MCU. So, like, I feel like whatever Phase 4 and Phase 5 together is going to be would have been, like, mind-boggling. But the fact that they just left these 2 years, did these 2 years, is surprising to me. Although it's what I wanted. But I thought you would just elongate Phase 4. Like, we're only announcing the first half. Not, this is our Phase 4.
Well, I went into it thinking, okay, we're going to get the movies here.
And the TV shows at Disney Plus.
Yeah, because that's a strictly Disney thing. They want to sell that. Yeah.
And you're a couple of months out from release at that point.
Yeah. So that was what was shocking about that. But it was nice seeing the grin and be like, okay, so they're really going to integrate like this. And
Feige is in creative control of these shows.
Yep.
There's no Jeffrey Loeb. There's no Perlmutter. There's no tangential ties. These are the Hollywood actors playing their same roles from the MCU in roles that will have implications on the MCU as a whole going forward, most specifically with WandaVision, and we'll get into that.
Yeah. Eternals came up first, and
which is odd, because you bookend it, like you start it with the November 2020 release for November, mm-hmm. fill that date in, then you come behind it
with the May release
at the end with the May release, the movie that is closest to being done. Now, granted, nobody got to talk for very long, but still, it was just an odd choice to be like Eternals.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, we've been hearing more about casting and stuff for Eternals than we've heard about Black Widow, and Widow's been shooting.
Yeah, we've known that Black Widow's been shooting.
But they've been pretending, nothing's going on, nothing to see here, guys. So I think about the Eternals, was just like, okay, you've heard all these casting rumors, here it is, here's everybody. And there were some surprises in there that I didn't even know about, like Brian Tyree Henry. Hadn't heard high nor hear of him being in there, and he comes out, and I'm like, good for him.
Well, we ended the speculation about Molly Bobby Brown for Eternals, because they brought out the Sprite, the little girl who's playing Sprite.
Who else? I mean, we knew
Jolie, but Hayek is a huge revelation. Like, we had not heard that name attached at all. And they're still not finished building out that cast. Like, they still have more big names to fill in. So, like, I mean, I'm glad that Chloe Zhao was able to come out. I'm glad that Marvel fans were able to get a chance to hear from her. And, you know, she looks like an adorable little 17-year-old with, you know, her braces and her braids. And she looks like she's barely old enough to hold a camera, much less direct. But she is a powerful director with a lot of really great visuals and a lot of great storytelling ideas in her. And I think giving her this palette, as big as it's going to be, because it's going to span centuries of the MCU, I think is going to be something that's really aesthetically pleasing. Jolie had a smile on her face the entire time, but it wasn't like she was like nerding out at anything. No. She was just like her typical goddess-like, you know, self. And, you know, Selma Hayek in a Marvel movie is something I never thought I was going to get. And Selma Hayek in a Marvel movie in which we're going to have a deaf character, mm-hmm. where we might have a LGBTQ.
I think you later said there will be.
Well, they confirmed it basically for Thor, but not necessarily.
I thought he did for, like, the next 3 or something.
So, I mean, Those are all exciting things. Selma Hayek in a Marvel movie, it's going to be awesome. And that's what I'm looking forward to. And then we get the Falcon and Winter Soldier And, you know, obviously we'd heard earlier in the day that Mickey and Stein were at Comic-Con signing in the Marvel booth. So clearly that was our first indication we were going to get TV stuff as well as film stuff. The revelation of Agent 13 coming back, which was confirmed. Hermit Zemo, one of my favorite villains in the MCU proper, getting his mask and coming back to terrorize the new Captain America and Winter Soldier. The fact that kept the Falcon and Winter Soldier title.
Yeah, I was surprised by that. I really thought it would be Cap and Winter Soldier, something like that.
Yeah, and maybe it's one of those things where he has to grow into it, and like at the end it becomes Captain America and Falcon. So those were all really cool revelations. What did you think about Falcon and Winter Soldier, which we've pretty much heard more about than most of these Disney Plus shows?
Yeah, so I wasn't surprised that they were there. I do think I never thought Zemo would be the villain. And that
finally got out of that little containment chamber that that Ross put him in at the end of Civil War.
Yeah, and now that he's back and he's full Baron Zemo, that is exciting, because I mean, after the way it ended, never thought that would be the case, but that's the way we're going to go.
In a post-blip world.
Yeah, and this clearly takes place after the Endgame, so I'm ready to see this one, to see what they're going to do with Falcon as he transitions into Captain America.
Who said on record on Saturday saying that he's tried on the suit.
Mm-hmm. They did a fitting. So, we'll probably get a picture of it sooner or later, because they have to start shooting this.
It's a fall 2020, right?
Yes. Because we get Black Widow, and then it's between Eternals. It was between Black Widow and Eternals.
Okay.
So, start shooting sometime this winter, I guess. Hell, maybe even in like a month.
Okay. And then the next thing that we get is Shang-Chi, the Legend of the Ten Rings.
That was the part.
See, like, I didn't think we were getting subtitles that we could dig into. We got subtitles galore.
Yeah. I went in knowing that this was going to be one that was announced. I
figured that Jim had said that the expectation was to get the actor stage.
And he was right about that. A Canadian kid.
Who had been asking Marvel to, you know,
He went back and retweeted that, that he tweeted Marvel, like, for a meeting. And then he retweeted saying, thanks for calling me back, after he got officially announced. But, like, apparently he got cast on Tuesday, like the Tuesday before.
He got auditioned on Sunday, got called on Tuesday.
Yeah,
and was on the Comic-Con stage on Saturday.
I went in knowing this was going to happen, but I wasn't really excited about it. But the minute I saw the Legend of the Ten Rings, I was like, oh, we doing this. like, you gave me the one shot where you teased that there was a real Mandarin, but we're doing this. And before I can, like, as soon as I refresh it again, they announce who they cast as Mandarin. I know his first name is Tony. I wish I could remember his last name. I don't know him from anything, but some people were excited. So he is more known than our Shang-Chi. But we're going real deal Mandarin in this. And what I was already assuming was going to be a old school kung fu movie. Now it's an old school kung fu movie with the Mandarin. Like, okay, you have my attention now. I'm ready to see this one. I have to wait until 2021. But
isn't that a dysfunctional family story?
I don't know much about Shang-Chi. I do know that through Twitter that his father in the comics is like Fu Manchu. And since that is like racist, I don't think they're going to go their route. And somebody did mention that maybe they're going to replace the father with the Mandarin as the father, kind of thing, which is a possibility to, you know, trade one race stereotype for another that may be not as offensive in this particular setting. But I don't know much about Shang-Chi, so I just know he's a master of the martial arts.
So this begs the question, and somebody's going to write a book about the Marvel Cinematic Universe at some point. Was this their plan all along? Or did the fanboys outcry over Shane Black's decisions cause them to do the one shot to leave this door open for themselves down the line?
I mean,
because like what Shane Black did would have painted them in a corner. They would have never been able to use the Ten Rings, which they started building in the very first Iron Man movie. Mm-hmm. You never would have been able to do the Mandarin. Like, and I was on board with the way they were doing Kingsley in the first half of Iron Man 3, making him and updating him as a terrorist leader. I was on board and on brand fine with that. Then you get the I Am the Mandarin by Killeridge, and it flips everything on its head, and Trevor Slattery as an actor and all the rest of it, and you get the fan outcry about basically Iron Man's version of the Joker becoming a laughingstock.
Yeah.
So was this always the plan, or was it like, oh crap, we realize now that we are painted in a corner, we need to do this one shot, get ourselves out of it, and we'll use this down the line?
I don't know. I honestly would think that they let Shane Black do that, and then they plan the one shot to just like say, wink, wink, nod, nod, there really is a Mandarin. But I don't know how far. I don't think they were gonna plan on going any further down the Mandarin rabbit hole, but this would appease people and people would be fine with it. Maybe, you know, hint to it here and there. Which
Feige showed a video showing Ten Rings like logos sprinkled throughout the MCU as recently as Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Now, when that one comes back up, I think you know that you want to do this then. But between Thor the Dark World and Ant-Man is what? 4 years? Something like mm-hmm. Ant-Man and the Wasp, like 4 years? So there's a lot of time for people to be like, well, so what are we going to do? Like, whichever one of the producers came up and was like, it's time to do Shang-Chi. And we can tie in the Mandarin. I think that's how that happens. I would be dying to know how that pitch from the producer to Kevin went. And then, like, oh, if we can do that, then we can start doing this. And they put that thing back in Ant-Man and the Wasp. I'm more than sure that's how that went. It's not a straight line from Iron Man 3 to Shang-Chi. I think it's a jagged line with start to stops.
We are getting a Mandarin. We're getting the Ten Rings as an organization. I mean, it's really, really exciting stuff. We got an Asian American director. I mean, all very positive things for that.
Yeah, I'm more excited about that movie now than I was going in. So.
And it is a February 2021 release.
Yep. Yeah, we just have to wait, you know, a year and a half.
And then you get a huge dump of TV. So you get WandaVision, which is the next thing out.
Mm-hmm. Apparently, when they were talking about this, they kept saying weird. They kept saying the show is weird.
You're gonna get to see the real Scarlet Witch.
Yeah, you're gonna find out what she's called. I think they said that about Doctor Strange, not so much this one. But they kept saying this one was weird. Elizabeth Olsen and Paul Bettany was there. And Paul Bettany was like, I don't even know if Vision's in this. Because, you know, post-Endgame. But he's in it. But we don't know how he's in it. We don't know anything about this.
Except that somebody's baby girl done all growed up.
Yep. Monica Rambeau, the little girl from Captain Marvel, is in
WandaVision.
Is in WandaVision. And they've cast her. She is... can't remember the actress name, but she was the lead in If Beale Street Could Talk, which I haven't seen that one, but I've heard good things. I'm happy that she's in this, but now it's just a big question of how does all these things fit together. How does Monica Rambeau, who last time we saw was a kid in Louisiana, now was all grown up and is involved in Wanda and Vision in this, what they keep repeatedly saying, weird story? How does all of this come together? And we've got years to figure this out.
They own Fox. Therefore, they own all of the rights to the X-Men again.
Mm-hmm.
Which means they could do House of M if they wanted to.
I don't want that.
You don't want that? I don't want that either. But I'm just putting it out there that they could do that. But what I was more fascinated by is the thing after this, or two things after this, which we'll get to, and how Scarlet Witch factors into that. So the next thing they bring out is Tom Hiddleston. And he promotes his Loki mm-hmm. television series. Another one of these that we knew coming in was going to be a thing. your thoughts, sir, on Loki.
So I do like that Kevin Feige was just like, okay, this is the Loki we're dealing with here. And they show the clip from Endgame where Loki takes the Tesseract. What everybody thought when they saw the movie is exactly what's going to happen. It is Loki that gets to play...
He goes around to a whole bunch of different spots in time in the MCU, but the first place he teleported to was right here in Hall H.
Yeah, and that's when Hiddleston walked out. But
and then you got 7,000 people chanting Loki at the same time.
That guy's good. The only thing better was he came out and gave his glorious purpose speech again there. They just lost their mind.
They did. He just started in that Comic-Con, though.
That was a fun one. They made it a point to say that it's this Loki, and they said, so we're dealing with a Loki that has not gone on this journey and, like, you know, bend it back towards justice and, like, Thor and stuff. No, this dude is still a prick, and this is the Loki we're following. So that opens up some storytelling possibilities. Of all of them, this is the one I'm, like, the least concerned about, because it's the Loki that we like, and he's going to be doing stuff. Everybody's going to be on board with it.
Yeah. It's just a matter of what locations in the MCU he visits along the way and how that might alter things in his version of reality.
Yeah.
I think it'll be very interesting. At that point, we get the Scott Derrickson coming out to talk about Doctor Strange 2, which we now know is called Doctor Strange Into the Multiverse.
Into the Multiverse of Madness.
Yes.
And right as soon as they said that, they also said Scarlet Witch is in that, and WandaVision ties directly in to Doctor Strange. And Scott Derrickson also said that this is like a true Marvel horror movie.
Marvel's first truly scary movie, whatever that means. Which would indicate Nightmare.
That's what a lot of people are speculating. I'm just like, one, for all those people that cried and moaned about the multiverse in Spider-Man, it's like, well, here, this is the dude that deals with the multiverse. He did it in the first one. He's doing it in this one.
Heck, I mean, and the Ancient One is in Endgame telling you that I can't give you this stone, because if I give you this stone, then I will be powerless to defend my reality until you return it.
Yeah. We're dealing with different realities and different versions of reality, and we've always done that. The first Doctor Strange in Avengers with Ancient One, it's always been a part there. Be happy. Now I have no idea what this movie's gonna, what anything that's gonna happen in this movie, but they have a lot more faith in Doctor Strange now, given it this May date. I think that's a combination of the first one, his appearances in the Avengers,
Infinity War and Endgame.
Yeah, and the fact that, you know, it's a Marvel movie. So I expect this one to do way better than the first one. I just don't... I need to see what all this weird stuff is that they speak of.
Weird trippy madness. But, I mean, you just got weird trippy madness with Mysterio and, you know, and Spider-Man. Yeah, but
that's like misdirection weird trippy madness. What is real weird trippy madness with magic going to really look
well,
like?
Well, he went into Dormammu's dominion and put him on a time loop in the end of the first one. So, like, we've seen, like, trippy, colorful Jack Kirby craziness.
Yeah, now we get the really weird stuff, though.
Fair enough.
I'm ready to see what it is.
I'm ready to see if they can pull it off.
Yeah.
That's for sure. So at that point, we get Mr. Jeffrey Wright coming out and telling us that he's going to be the Watcher as we go through the what-if scenarios in the MCU. Yeah. This is the animated series. They haven't done an animated series before. This is the title I was least excited about coming into and out of the panel, because I don't feel this is the one that's going to have any ramifications on the actual MCU at large. It's just going to be a whole bunch of alternate what ifs, which is what the comics are, which are going to be cool stories. The fact that you get all the original cast members coming back to voice their original roles will be good, but I just don't see this. Like, I'm not super hyped. Like, I don't need this show tomorrow.
Yeah, no, that's fine. But what it did tell me is that when we finally do get the Watcher, like, real deal Watcher in the movie, it's Jeffrey Wright.
Yeah.
So I'm good with that.
Yeah, I think that's good casting.
Yeah.
Although I think there's some better casting at the end of the panel. So that brings us to Hawkeye.
Katie
Bishop.
We're getting Kate Bishop. They have not cast her yet because they didn't bring her out. But Jeremy Renner was there, and he's like, you know, I'm training the next generation.
There will be flashbacks to his Ronin years.
Yeah. So they can see all the terrible things he did.
Good, because I'm tired of it being obfuscated by just a backlit window. Like, I want to actually see this dude chop people's heads off. If that's what he did, I need to see it, Chad.
You still won't see it. You would just be heavily alluded to it. But yeah.
We don't know what the limits on Disney Plus are going to be. They own Hulu now, too. Yeah.
This one didn't really move my needle, but I will be there day one to watch it like everybody else.
Yeah. Because I don't think it's going to be his last appearance in the MCU. I think he's saving that for this coming up May, which is the next thing that we one of the next things that we got. But after Loki, after the Hawkeye announcement, we got Taika Waititi coming out to do Thor 4. Now, we had the announcement for Thor 4 Wednesday before when we had Jim on. So your thoughts on Thor, Love and Thunder, and a certain someone.
So last week we were clearly talking about why would they announce this before Comic-Con? Why would they do it? Well, we found out because, you know, Taika, we knew Taika was doing it. We figured Hemsworth and Tessa Thompson would be back, and they were. Well, we did not know, and what shocked the hell out of me was Natalie Portman is back.
What is she back as,
hold
Chad?
Hold on. After Endgame, when she didn't even actually physically come back, they just used...
No, she did. She did come back. No, they cut her scene.
No. The physical scenes of her is old footage from Thor 2.
No,
But she recorded a line
right.
for this one. So she did do something, but she didn't physically come back.
They said that she was open to coming back. There was a scene that they had written with her, with Rocket explaining why he needed the ether, and that she did come back and actually shoot that scene, but it got cut from the film.
So
they used the cut around footage with Dark World, with just focusing on Rocket, you know, looking at her.
Well, all that said, we thought okay, that was nice, fun little send off. Yeah. We'll never see her again. And then she walks out on stage, and not only does she walk out on stage, Taika Waititi pulls out a Mjolnir and he hands it to her. And for those that don't know, in the comics, Jane Foster became Thor for a while. And this was confirmation that not only was she coming back, but she was coming back and she was going to play Thor. And I was just gobsmacked that this was happening.
So, Chad, who's left in the Lonely Ladies of Marvel bar?
Oh, that would be Betty Ross if she ain't never coming out.
She might come out. Eventually, Liv Tyler is a very prominent actress. They might at some point decide. But be that as it may, it has been a very great year for me. Not only have I gotten to witness with my own two eyes Pepper Potts don a suit of armor and shoot lasers and actually do Iron Man things as Rescue, which you can buy as a pop vinyl now at Hot Topic for $17.99. I am also now going to get not only Jane Foster returned to the MCU to confront her ex-boyfriend who would never come to see her when he came to Earth, but I'm going to get her as Thor, being worthy of the power of Thor and wielding the hammer. So it will have been Captain America and Jane Foster on the same level, wielding the hammer. That is a fantastic thing, Chad. She's a Nobel Prize winning doctor, and she's going to be worthy of wielding the hammer. Which also hopefully means we get Selwig and we get Kat Dennings.
I can do it without Kat Dennings. But, you know, after Endgame, I was like, I thought I was done with the Pepper Potts gimmick. I thought it was dope over. You'd won. There was no point anymore. And then this happened. And I gotta live with this until this damn movie comes out. So while I'm gobsmacked and happy that this is happening, also there's a part of me that is just like, why has thou forsaking me.
I literally tweeted out in the middle of the panel in all caps that Jane Foster was rescued from the Lost Ladies of Marble Bar.
Yep, and it was at that moment I knew that I had to deal with this for a long time.
She's going to wield the hammer, Chad.
I'm happy for her. I'm sad for me.
So after all the raucousness of Thor, Love, and Thunder, which is an excellent title, by the way.
It is.
We are going to move into our final movie of the year, of the panel, because they announced the five TV shows, Falcon, Winter Soldier, WandaVision, Loki, Hawkeye, and What If. They announced the four movies, Eternals, Shang-Chi, Doctor Strange, Into the Multiverse of Madness, and that just left one. And that was the one we've already known about for ages, the one that's been shooting, the one that has a female director, the one that has a Midsummer actress in it, the fact that David Harbour is playing a guy named Lexi, which is kind of ironic, considering Stranger Things Season 3, which this is also your reminder. I know it's been gone from the Zeitgeist for like 3 weeks, but like Season 3 of Stranger Things is one of the best seasons of television you will see this season. Black Widow. Mm-hmm. We're going to Budapest, Chad.
We are going to Budapest.
You know what happens in Budapest? You know who also continuously brings up Budapest?
Hawkeye. Yeah. Oh, Hawkeye is going to be in this movie. They didn't show... He didn't... I don't think he was out there with them. But, yeah. But they said that the movie...
takes place between Civil War and Infinity War.
Yep. And,
Which begs the question, is your hair going to be red or is your hair going to be blonde? Because she's a blonde by the time Infinity War starts.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's true. I would imagine we see when she does that. And because Florence Pugh is blonde, I'm pretty sure that's why she changed it. They'll probably make it like that's why she changed her hair to blonde. But from listening to it, it sounds like they could potentially make this a Passing the Torch movie because Florence Pugh is playing the other character that is Black Widow. So
there are multiple Black Widows in this film. They said that. And it's not just one. There are multiples.
Yeah, but she could be the one that picks up the mantle and becomes Black Widow for future movies.
Yeah, there's a cis line in there.
Yeah. But apparently they beat the hell out of each other in the kitchen first before they like have a drink in the same kitchen right after the fight. I don't know. The action sounds more grounded and Winter Soldier-like, which I think will work better for this movie. I'm interested to see who all the characters are because I know who Florence Pugh is. David Harbour's Alexei, and the little bit I looked into it, it sounds like a character is like the Russian equivalent of Captain America, and he even said his character has problems with Captain America, so that would fit into that. And then they ended it with her fighting the Taskmaster, which they didn't really describe what he looked like. I don't know if he looks completely comic accurate or like...
comic accurate, obscuring the face, having the shield, the whole deal.
Well, his face in the comics is like... Originally, he wears a skull mask, and then eventually becomes his face. So I don't know how that looks. But she does end up fighting him. So they kind of just threw all that at us and finally admitted that this was a thing and that they've been shooting it.
Not ScarJo's best... I mean, look... she's getting killed right now for her I should be allowed to play a tree comments.
Yeah.
Even though they are, you know, taken out of context from probably what the original intent was. It's still made the rounds around the internet. She didn't seem thoroughly engaged in the interviews that I saw. She seemed to kind of be aloof at certain points, distant at others. It was kind of weird. It was like maybe she was jet lagged because they had flown everybody in from set, but like Rachel Weisz and Miss Pugh and Harbour and everybody else had this buoyant passion and energy about the things that they were saying, even if they had to dance around things. She just kind of stumbled over words and was just kind of blah, and it just was like, this is your passion project. Like, this movie is only happening because you fought with Kevin to get this movie made. If anybody should be over the moon to introduce it to people, it should be you.
But I mean, this is pretty much her swan song, and she knows it, and she's been basically Avengering it up since April, because she's been doing the press for Endgame and then went straight into this, and now she's still in that, but she had to come all the way to Comic-Con for that. So I won't begrudge her aloofness on this.
So that leaves us with no time to talk about Black Panther 2 or Captain Marvel 2, no, or
Spider-Man,
or Spider-Man 3,
Sony, which
or Spider-Man 3, or you know, the Fantastic Four, or certainly no time left to talk about mutants.
Yeah, he did say Fantastic Four, and following Twitter, somebody just said, I know it was in the room, just said the Fantastic Four, and I'm like, it's happening, let's go. And then I found out that he just said it like...
Yeah, he was lumping it in with all the other things he didn't have time to talk about. And didn't have time to talk about mutants. But that's the panel, right, Chad? That's the panel. Let's all give everybody their 7,000 hats. And let's all take a group photo. And see, everything's just lovely, right, Chad?
Well, see, that would be about the time my timeline went quiet for a little while when they're giving out the hats. And then the next thing I know, again, same person that's in the room just says, Mahershala Ali. And I'm like... Why the hell is he there? Because the last thing you said was Fantastic Four. So what the hell is going on? And then I have to wait. And then they say, apparently how it went down in the room was everybody had their hats on.
Their Black Widow hats.
They had their Black Widow hats on. And Kevin was like, well, Mahershala, looks like you have your own hat. What is that? And he puts on his hat and Blade. And then they put the words up on there. And then they basically say, good night, everybody, and walk away. So Mahershala Ali is Blade. And it just happened, and they pulled it out at the end of the con, blew everybody's minds, and then sent them out with their wearing their hats, which is free marketing for everybody else that Black Widow's coming. Marvel, y'all, A1 operation over there. Yeah, and apparently after this, Kevin said that this happened because Herschel called him was like, I want to be Blade, and Kevin's like, all right. That's it. That's all that happened. And that's why we're here.
There are very few actors in the world who could call up Marvel and be like, I want to do X.
Look, the man's got 2 supporting actors trophies, like, from the past, what, three years? Yeah, you know, if he calls you, like...
And coming off the heels of a fantastic turn in True Detective Season 3.
Yeah, he's nominated for Emmy for that, too. Yeah. If he calls me like, I want to be Blade, you like, damn right. Kevin's a smart man. He said damn right.
So, he immediately gets asked, and I don't know if it was an intentional design or not, Feige never had more than 96 seconds with any pull reporter on the line. All of the interviews that I saw with Feige conducted by people who were working the rope line behind the scenes at Hall H after the panel was over, none of them were more than 96 seconds. So, like, I don't know if, like, that was an intent or, like, the panel ran long or, like, they were intentionally trying to keep him from answering a bunch of stuff. But, like, none of the things were more than 96 seconds. And that man can talk a thing to death anyway. Mm-hmm. But the one thing I did draw out of all that was, yeah, this is the complete Phase 4.
Yeah.
We debated whether or not to announce Phase 4 and Phase 5. This is what we decide to announce, and this is Phase 4.
Which, if that's the way he's doing it, maybe Phase 5 we do get at D23. Because at this point, you just go to Comic-Con and be like, we got footage and all this stuff to show you. And you don't have to do a line launch every time.
Yeah, and that's what they did in 15, and that's what they've done a few other times. They haven't always, I mean, like I said, the last Slate announcement they did was on a random Tuesday in the middle of a theater. You don't have to talk about 2022 until 2021. Because, I mean, look how long Black Widow's been shooting, and they've been denying that left, right, and sideways all the way through doing press for Endgame.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, Feige was very adamant, we're not saying anything until after Spider-Man Far From Home is over, and then we get this. I think you could go all the way till summer of 2021.
Before you know. You could, but I don't think they'll do that. Because there's nothing like, there's no end capper in this that would.
There's not a billion-dollar movie in this five. The only contender would probably be Thor: Love and Thunder, and that's a November release.
Yeah. So yeah, like, you get the Infinity War 1 and 2 announcements. Like, well, we can't say anything until after those two because those two are big deals. This one, you can, if you want to say it, you can say it whenever you want. Particularly depending on what's in that line.
Right. And you've got 3 dates for 2022. I saw some people online who were frustrated that we didn't get any news on Guardians 3, and I was like, look, you know, The Suicide Squad.
Got a whole other movie to do before then.
The Suicide Squad is not until 2021, August of 21. So, like, in between Doctor Strange Into the Multiverse of Madness and Thor Love and Thunder, you know, you're going to have
Suicide Squad. And you have to, and they, you basically sit with the movie from beginning to end. So he'll start shooting sometime next year. He's not done until the movie's released. He's sitting with Suicide Squad.
Now, yeah, maybe, the Matt Reeves thing. I mean, Matt Reeves would have done, had a Batman movie done, but he was still doing post work on War for the Planet of the Apes when he got the job.
Yeah, so he might have, he has ideas and stories done and all that, but
he had the script finished. Like, he turned the draft script in Memorial Day 2018. Like, he's got the script done. But, like, if you look at it, there's no writer or director attached for Spider-Man 3, although we know...
It'll be John Watts.
Yeah, we assume. You've got no writer or director attached for Blade. We just got an actor. You have no writer or director attached for Captain Marvel 2. You have a writer-director attached for... and an actor attached for Black Panther 2. And you've got a writer and director and actors attached for Guardians 3. But, I mean, there's no writer and director or stars attached for a Fantastic Four film. There's no writer or director or stars attached for an X-Men film. So, like, there's not a lot that's developed far enough along the line where you could announce a Phase 4 and Phase 5. So that's why I think they just went with the firm projects that are already starting production or are going to start production very soon. I know some people around the interwebs have taken to calling this the interphase, if, you know, you are truly are not going to change anything. Feige said he won't, you know, there's room to change, but I think he's just insinuating the Sony deal, mm-hmm. that if Sony decides they want to do another Spider-Man movie,
you can put that in there.
You can put that in there, but I'm not sure that I think 23 would be a better play for that, because you've got a July 2023 date, and that's 4 years.
It just seems weird that they would want to wait that long, considering they were. It was pretty much 2-2 and like.
It was It was a Civil War in 16, and then Homecoming in 17, and then this in 19. Would do 21 would be the logical play.
Yeah. Even just on Sony's schedule, there was. The Garfield one was in 14, so the most they went was 3 years. I think the first one was in 2012.
Yeah, Garfield's two movies were 12 and 14.
So 2 years apart, then you get 3 years for the recasting, and then another 2 years for the next one. I don't see them waiting past three.
Well, then it has to be a 2022, right?
2022 is the latest.
Yeah, 21 or 22, especially if you're trying to pump this high school story out, right?
I mean, I don't know how you do that now with the whole, you know...
outing?
Masking thing, but if it's 2021, then that kicks.
Which, by the way, was Pascal's idea.
The unmasking?
She brought it up to Marvel and was like, we need to do something we ain't done before. How about this? And Marvel was like, yeah, cool idea.
I don't like it, but we'll see what they do with it.
But so, yeah. I mean, Phase 4, the interlude.
I mean, that's fine.
I mean, it's all about new beginnings, Chad. That's what Feige's line's been. It's all about new beginnings.
Because you have to drop it back down after Endgame. And Spider-Man was a step in the right direction. It made it seem big in the beginning, but then it became what it should be, a smaller Spider-Man movie. These movies are all Eternals is cosmic.
So that cosmic scope is still little. In century spanning.
Yeah. But yeah, you have to bring everything down.
And the Black Widow movie is filling in a gap between Civil War and Infinity War.
Yeah.
So you're filling in backstory there. Which is interesting, because what you do after that, if that movie's a success, can't make it a franchise.
If you do it with the...
unless you're going to pass the baton, as you say. And then Doctor Strange is going to be tied into WandaVision, which will both be set in the post-Endgame blip world. Mm-hmm. We don't have any idea where Shang-Chi is going to be going to be placed, because if you're doing the Legend of the Ten Rings and the Ten Rings logos have shown up throughout all these movies, it could be a movie that completely predates even Iron Man.
I think since we got the tease for him, it happens after Iron Man 3. I would imagine it's a post-Blip world too.
And then we know Thor Love and Thunder will be post-Blip, because it'll be dealing with the ramifications of, you know, a queen looking for her queen. Mm-hmm. And Jane Foster and all of that. And let's see, which one am I missing? Eternals is, I would assume, century spanning, so there's not necessarily a defined date there. And Doctor Strange and Thor both take place post-Blip. What am I missing there? Black Widow, Eternals, Shang-Chi, Thor, and Doctor Strange and Thor.
Yeah, because Shang-Chi, Doctor Strange,
and Thor in 2021.
Yeah, so that's right, because there's only five movies.
Yeah. There's two, and this will be the first year. The 2020 will be the first time they only released two movies since 2016.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they're not really going to be filling in a lot of... They're only filling in backstory with the Black Widow movie. Everything else is going to have ramifications...
Going forward. Yeah. That's fine. Interludes are good.
Interludes are very good. So, Chad, how was your Comic-Con? Should we have more studios? And what do we now get at D23 if you've now, you know, displayed this all to the world?
That's the question, because I still think they'll give us something at D23. I just have no idea.
Now you get a panel discussion about all of these shows. I think you do what you would do at Comic-Con for a television series. Mm-hmm. I think you get those panels at D23. So I think you get a Falcon and Winter Soldier panel that then leads into a WandaVision panel that then leads into a Loki panel, which then leads into a Hawkeye panel, which then leads into a What If panel.
That might work.
Yeah, and that way you flush out and give more details. Because like I said, no one was able to say very much at all at this event.
Mm-hmm.
Which, why they even had the little silly woman there, I have no idea. Just let Feige... Feige the microphone. Push her off to the side. Let Feige run the show. Bring out the people. Because that's essentially what he was doing
anyway. Yeah. As far as how my Comic-Con was like, there's more to look forward to when there are other studios. But particularly when the other competition is there, but they tend to say stuff and then never do it. So giving them a year to get their stuff together might actually help them. It just felt really like a chill Comic-Con up until Saturday night, which is not always. It's not
Saturday night rock people's world, yeah. And now we're gonna see what they do for D23. And that'll be a really interesting thing. And I hope more studios go back next year.
Hopefully.
And I hope that we get a bunch more news. Not that we didn't get, you know, the Game of Thrones writers backed out at the last minute, leaving their cast members there to defend their lowly scum butts, which, you know, you should never, ever, ever, as a creative, like, it's like a head coach, like, saying, I don't know, go ask the guy who didn't, you know, miss catching the ball. Like, go talk to that guy. I don't know. I told him how to run the route. He just didn't run the route the right way. Go talk to that guy. Like, okay. So you're going to make me go talk to the 18-year-old kid who screwed up because you're not willing to take the heat for it. So you're going to back out 2 days before. You have to be there because you don't want to have to take the heat because you saw what happened the weekend before. And now you're going to let those actors have to defend you? That's not cool.
No.
Westworld, we're going to get Nazi Germany world, which will be interesting. War world, if you want to call it that. That'll be interesting. Got the Marvel gameplay previews. We got the X-Men comic book news. So it was a peppered Comic-Con, but it wasn't fully seasoned until you got to Saturday night.
I can do that, yeah.
So, all right. That'll about do it for this week's podcast. If you want to keep up with our podcast, you can follow us on Twitter. I am at BCW Tiger Fan.
At The Mets Theory.
And we have a special spoiler cast coming on Once Upon a Time in Hollywood as Quentin Tarantino hammers out his ninth official film with Leonardo DiCaprio and Brad Pitt telling the story of the summer of 1969 in Hollywood and Shannon Tate. So for Chad, I'm Brian. Have a good evening.